Hello and welcome to Two Fat Expats, where we're all about packing as much into your expat life as you can. And that's what we mean when we say fat. We mean full and overflowing. This expat podcast is listened to in over 160 countries, and we have a Facebook group with nearly 12,000 members. I'm Kirsty Rice. I'm an Aussie based here in Qatar. And each week I'm joined by Nikki Moffat, who's also an Aussie, but she's over in Hamburg, Germany. Together we have 12 locations between us, which is a lot of, what's my address again? And new power adapters that are hopefully the right voltage. How are you, Nikki Moffat?
I'm fine, thank you, Kirsty Rice. I'm very excited. The Christmas markets opened in Hamburg yesterday. So there's a Glühwein on every corner for the next 6 weeks.
And I do have a little giggle every time I hear you say Hamburg.
See, I'm becoming localized.
You are. I'm jealous of the Christmas markets. That's going on my to-do list next year. I've not been to the Christmas markets, but I want to.
There must be a Christmas market visit in your future. What's going on in Qatar?
In Qatar, it is beautiful. The weather's amazing. People are out and about. And we do have a little bit of Christmas activity going on in here. There are Christmas trees up in supermarkets, which you wouldn't necessarily think would be the thing in a very Muslim country. But there's definitely, you know, it's changed. It's changed since I first came here all those years ago. There is a lot more Christmas action. So, Nikki, shall we get on with the show?
Let's kick it off. So we're going to follow our usual format, and we're going to break the podcast up into five topics, which are, of course,
geographically challenged, which is where we talk about the impact of having lived in more than one place. We'll also cover expat relationships. It's a really good one this week. That can be anyone you've met in your expat travels.
We'll also have a look at expat tech, where we look at tech available to expats, and expat money, where we discuss issues that might be particularly relevant to you.
And location, 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 which I believe we're up to the letter Q, and I can't imagine where that person is going to come from.
It's a surprise guest this week, Kirsty. Surprise.
Okay, so geographically challenged. Nikki, I wanted to talk about, because it has become abundantly clear to me that I am living in a completely different place to where I was only probably a few short weeks ago, and that is the challenge of when you arrive in one place and it's either beautiful or horrendous depending on the weather. And I think this is a really underrated fact to expat life. For instance, over the summer here and in many places in the Middle East, the weather is for some completely unbearable. Do you know, the temperature gets up to 50 degrees and we have heat that just lasts like that for weeks and weeks. You know, in Australia you can have 45 degree heat, but it cools off overnight, you know, and you sit outside and it cools down. Whereas in the Middle East, it just stays stinking hot throughout the entire summer. And the thing that a lot of people don't know about Doha or Qatar is the humidity is really, really high. And I'm talking, it's a country where in the summer, if you wear glasses, you walk out of your office building and your glasses will just fog up instantly because the humidity is just so high. And of course, you go through this heat where you go, I can't handle this anymore. I can't live like this anymore. This is crazy. This is nothing like it is where I'm from or whatever. And then one day, you walk outside and you suddenly go, this is the best place to live in the world. This is amazing. And people don't realize that about the Middle East, that when the weather changes and you get to sort of, you know, mid to late November, it is suddenly the most perfect spring day every day. You know, it's beautiful. So I have noticed just within myself of how I feel. The weather here is so divine in that you've got all the doors open. There's no aircon on anymore. You know, it's just beautiful outdoor living. It's a great place to go for a walk. Suddenly here we have things like our farmers markets have opened up again and you can just wander happily. Have you lived anywhere like that, Nikki, where you've kind of arrived and felt one way or the weather has just got to you and really affected how you felt about it?
Yeah, well, a couple of places, but it's certainly in Hong Kong, it never gets up to 50 degrees, but it is very heavily humid for sort of 8 to 9 months of the year. And then one day, I just remember one day in the end of October, you always wake up and you walk outside and the humidity is gone. And it's just like a totally different place.
Yeah. It's amazing. Yep, that's it.
Yeah, that was always what we said was the difference between Hong Kong and the rest of sort of Asian cities, Singapore, KL, Jakarta. Hong Kong actually had an extra season.
Yeah. So I remember arriving in Libya, in Tripoli, in August. And I had very young children, so I was unaware about this whole British and American, you know, long summer break for school. If I knew what I knew now, I wouldn't even bother going until, you know, sort of late August. And I'd gone there in early, so late July, early August, I'd say it was. But I remember it was stinking hot for a start, but also heading to the vegetable markets, and there were carrots that were like the size of my little finger. And just looking at this pitiful display of food and really thinking, because I was just clueless, I was much younger and much less travelled, but just thinking, oh, my God, what are we going to eat? Like, how are we going to live here? This place is just... this is horrendous. And, you know, and dealing with these tiny little withered vegetables. And then, of course, 2 months down the track, that heat went away and there was an abundance of fruit and vegetables. And I remember one of my favourite things in Libya was that this man would come around with a, you know, like a truck or a ute, we'd call it in Australia, you'd call it a truck in America. But the back of it was just filled and overflowing with beautiful vegetables, really great veggies. And it's amazing that what was once my despair when I arrived was the same thing that kept me loving it, you know, by the end of our stay there, is that whole interaction with the vegetable man and the quality of the fruit and vegetables and being there. And I thought that was just such a great example of how you can't, I guess one thing I'd like to say is if you are somewhere where you've just arrived and it seems miserable because of the weather, that is the one thing you can change, that will change, that you have control. It will pass, but yeah.
Well, unless you live in Northern Europe quite often.
But you have just had a lovely, lovely summer.
We have, and it's all anyone can talk about, and possibly it will have to sustain us in conversation for the next 3 years.
Kind of like I remember going out to lunch with a client in Canada, and that was my day when I realised I had to leave, where someone said, "Have you seen the weather report? It's meant to be good next Tuesday." And thinking, I can't live like this anymore. I can't do it anymore. I can't keep waiting for next Tuesday.
There's always a thing about next Tuesday, isn't there? Yeah, so yes, I think that that's very important to remember that in most locations, the weather will change and you will be happy again.
You think that's why we all love Asia so much? Like, I mean, you meet so many expats that are busting to get back to Asia. Do you think that's it? It's that weather is pretty much the same. It's either wet or dry, unless you're as far as Hong Kong. But, I mean, if you're in a Jakarta or a Thailand or a Singapore or a Vietnam, you know, the weather is pretty much summer all the year. So do you think that's it? Is people just have that one wardrobe?
Well, I think it is, because you hear people have totally different wardrobes. People have 5 coats, you know, a summer coat, a mid-weather coat, your first level puffer jacket, your down jacket, your ski jacket. I mean, it's true and serious. If you live in Asia, you don't need all that stuff. I actually saw someone on a Facebook group the other day saying, moving to Asia, selling all my coats.
Yep. Oh, that's gold. That is absolutely gold. Okay. Well, Nikki, I think that's covered us for geographically challenged, just to let people know. If you are challenged by the weather, it does get better, but also don't judge a country by its first 2 months.
True that. And if you would like to leave us a message about what the weather is like where you live, you can do that by going to truefatexpats.com, which is our website, and clicking on the microphone and leaving us a message. It's just like a voicemail, only it's on a website. And this week, actually, we had a message from Anita. I know Anita. She lives in Hamburg. And Kirsty, do you want to listen to what Anita had to say?
I do. I'm going to listen to it right now.
Hi, Nikki and Kirsty. Just listened to the podcast, and there were great topical discussions, as always. Really enjoyed hearing about the labelling. Freelance, that's a great and useful word. And the interview as well with the Paris lady that lived in Paris as well, also super interesting. What else? And the Michelle Obama book. I can't wait to read that. So I was interested to hear your perspective, Nikki. As for the international fair, I can confirm those lamb chops were delicious. Have a fabulous weekend and well done, ladies. Keep it up.
She's great.
Can I just say also that I've had people send me photos of their family, them or their family members eating lamb chops since last week's episode as well.
Kudos. I need that secret marinade. Do you think you can share the secret marinade, or is it really a secret?
I can't, because I wasn't allowed to have it. Did I not explain what happened?
No.
I asked because I said, look, I'm happy to help organize everything. Can you tell me what I need to buy for the marinade? And they said, no, we can't. But we can ask you to buy these 6 ingredients and bring them to the kitchen. I said, okay. And that's what I did.
Is there only one holder of the secret marinade?
I think there is only one holder of the secret marinade, and it's a science teacher at school.
Okay.
So all right. I can't tell you that secret marinade. So if anyone has a good marinade, they can also phone that in.
Can you please phone that in if you have a good secret marinade? I plan on eating a few lamb chops out over the summer.
Shush now. Okay, because the expat relationships, I think you did an interview this week.
I did do an interview this week. So this week I met Sarah, who is American, and Kim, who's British, and they live in Heidelberg in Germany. Sarah's been an expat for around 25 years. She moved to Germany in college and she basically never really left. I think she had a little bit of time when she went back to the States for a brief while, but she has spent really the majority of the last 25 years in Germany. She loves language and she's an editor. And Kim is a born and bred Brit. And in her words, she never thought she'd end up in Germany with a woman with 4 kids. So Kim and Sarah are a same-sex couple. And I got talking to Sarah over our Facebook group because she was looking for sort of a bit of diversity and asking about, were there any other expat sort of groups with that diversity. So Kim moved to Germany to be with Sarah, and she made a really good point about those first few weeks or months when you're in a new location, and talked about the honeymoon of a new relationship and the honeymoon of being in a new country. And, you know, we all know about that, Nikki, that blissful moment, that honeymoon period when you're in your new country as an expat. And I hadn't really thought about the combination of that when you're in a new relationship as well. And she said, you know, then eventually that sort of wore off and she started to have that familiar expat crisis of the job identity and, you know, what do you do? And before she'd managed to find her thing to do and what sort of keeps her going in Germany. But when she was talking about the whole, you know, the crisis of when you're new and you haven't yet found a job and people asking you what to do, I asked her, would you call yourself a trailing spouse or an expat wife? And this is what she had to say.
No. No, because yeah, it wouldn't occur to me, but I guess I fit the definition.
If there is one.
You know, Sarah's the, you know, the major breadwinner. And again, that's different for me because I've always been the major breadwinner in relationships. So that's very strange. But you know, now I'm getting income and I'm a typical Gemini and I need variety in my life. And I, have, what's it, three different businesses, as well as being an English teacher by circumstance.
So Sarah, you've done expat life with a husband. Can you tell me, is expat life different as a same-sex couple?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely is. I don't know if it's because of this. I mean, I kind of went into the same-sex couple thing at the age of 44.
That's right.
Yeah.
But I could show you the pictures of her playing rugby and there was never any doubt.
yeah, this was an issue like many years. So I'd say... yeah, but it's also this whole thing happened after 40. You know, I moved over here at 21. So you get to this stage where I don't care what people think. Mm-hmm. I don't, you know, and Germany is probably easier than many other countries on that front because mm-hmm. people can be not very friendly, but they do not really, I have never had anyone say anything to us or make us feel, like, for a while Kim thought people were staring at us because we were holding hands and my British friend had to, you know, reassure her that it was actually just what Germans do and it was nothing to do with us.
Because you in the UK, you automatically get on the defensive with that.
Yeah, and Kim would make me, like, we were in certain places and we weren't allowed to hold hands and all that. And that
in
was
the UK.
Weird in the UK.
Yeah.
And here, I think it's been interesting for me because now I'm the one, and I had to do this. I lived in Ireland for 3 years with my ex-husband and I was the spouse. It was my job and he trailed, if you want to call it that.
Yeah.
So now I'm the... I call it secretary of the world, you know, with a part. It's nothing to do with same sex though, with, you know, Kim not speaking a lot of German. But I would say actually it's not that much different in any case. I mean, probably not. I don't know because it's the same stuff you have to do and it's the same supporting each other. The only thing is, of course, with Brexit and all that, what's going to happen there? We're happy that Germany has gay marriage. They had civil partnership. And gay marriage came in last year. So that will make things easier for us in the future with Brexit.
Do you think there's things that other people maybe don't think about that you guys have to consider with visas or immigration? I mean, I know same-sex marriage came in last year in Germany, but are you two married?
No, I'm still stuck in the middle of, divorce because I waited too long. We didn't financially. So that's... that will come. And I think you do have to think about, I mean, of course, well, come on. I mean, if we were ever going to go back to the States, it sounds all good now, but Trump's in place and who knows? We all worry about that stuff. I mean, we had to ask in our little town, what's the situation? This was, I think, 2 years ago or a year ago. We asked the lady.
It was just before the Brexit vote. And at that point, you know, nobody dreamed that it would go the way that it did.
But
they researched it for us.
They did research it for us. And I have a permanent residency here, but I don't have a German passport because of the whole Americans have to give it up and it's very complicated. And I could get maybe a German one, but then they charge you. It's very complicated. So we asked them, hey, what's the situation? They had no idea. It's a little town. They said, we've never had that before. But I have to say, they went back and researched and they actually called us, which is very rare here, to tell us, yes, Kim would have the same rights if you get married as any other EU wife, whatever, spouse. I mean, we're probably breaking new ground for the little town that we're in, where they have to go. But they really did have to go and look it all up.
I don't know. And then, you know, with Brexit, the European Union have just accepted the Theresa May's proposal, the draft agreement, but you know who it still remains to be seen what kind of is going to happen there in Parliament, and you know what's going to be passed and what's not going to be passed.
Yes.
But I've said that there's going to be I would be able to stay in Germany, so that I mean that was a big concern, obviously.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I guess that's not necessarily a same-sex couple thing, is it? It's anyone who's not married sort of problem, isn't it?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. What about with travel? Like, I know traveling to Middle Eastern countries could be a problem, you know, with hotel rooms and things. Have you guys had any issues with that? I know you've only been together for a few years, but does it affect your traveling expat life?
To be honest, I think certainly for me, I make a mental note that I probably wouldn't travel to those countries.
Yeah, that's probably true. We haven't even tried. We travel basically to the US. We've been in the UK quite often. We have a place in Cornwall. I mean, we do get asked, even going to the States. I was really surprised that when we got into the States last time, I said, "Are you married?" And then the guy at you know, Homeland Security, and I was like, "Oh my gosh, we're actually." Yeah. I didn't expect it was Texas or somewhere. But I have to say that, yeah, I don't think that we would go anywhere right now where we'd have to deal with that. That would just be too much.
Yeah, and struggle. Rightly or wrongly, I think you get to a certain age and you think, sod it, if you're not going to be welcoming, I'm not going to go there.
Yes.
Even though you mm-hmm. might miss out on certain experiences, yeah. You know, I'm too old to have the hassle of homophobia if I can avoid it. Yes. That's what I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, for here, the only little things we deal with are kind of I almost got in an altercation with the swimming pool lady because they had a family entrance. It was a fancy one too, the family entrance fee or whatever. And they said, and the woman was really nice, but she said, "Well, you know, do you live together?" And I said, "Well, yes." You know, or she said something like, "What's the relationship?" And I said, "Partner." "And do you live together?" And, "Well, we can't just let you in." And I said, "If we were heterosexual, you would let us in. Would be asking us this question, you know?" Mm-hmm. And I didn't have my ID with me. And, you know, I was thinking, and we've had friends who had to bring their marriage certificate to the pool to get the €7 family entrance rate that are lesbians.
Nice.
I think the woman knew to back down. And then she said, "Well, can you show me something?" And so I showed her our Facebook profile. She let us in.
Have you guys joined any expat groups, or are there? I know you're in a small town, but are there any expat groups for you to join?
Yeah, our friend Jane runs an expat group, and really since we've been in this house, I have to say that's been a lifesaver.
We made some really good friends.
Yeah,
it's a really small. It's just women, and they meet once a month for dinner. It's not there are. We just joined the IWC, the Women's International Women's Club, that just started mm-hmm. in Heidelberg, and that's a bigger one. We actually haven't been to anything yet, but this was just a small thing, and that really saved us. We made lots of good friends out of it.
And is there much diversity in the expat group?
But there is to a certain extent in that you know, one of the members has a trans son.
Yeah.
And
yeah. She felt comfortable talking about it, I think, as well, because we were there. I mean, a lot of the people around us even our closest friends, you know, have kids who've come out as bi or whatever recently. And so I think, yeah. You know, in the circle of all these white people, mostly, but yeah, there is diversity there.
Do you feel like, I know, you know, we have 11,500 people, I think, in our Facebook group, and we're all over the world. And I think you raised it, Sarah, of, you know, that, Are there expat groups in particular that, and I don't think they are, and I think it probably is because in the past that sort of expat partners moving away traditionally in the olden days was, you know, men moving and women following, and it's changed dramatically, Justine. I've been doing it for 20 years and it's changed dramatically just in 20 years, and I think now we're on to the next leap as well, with, you know, that there are HR companies are having to think about relocating same-sex couples and offering all the same advantages and whatever. Do you feel that there's anything you think people should know to make life any easier, or anything you think is missing, or you know, anything you've noted about the expat world?
I think there's just, of course, I mean, the thing that really bothered, even in the groups, even in one little expat group that I was this women's group that I hadn't gone to yet. I think part of it is that people have to also recognize that not every couple is this traditional one. And when they're inviting, it's the smallest thing, but you can make people feel not welcome by, you know, bring your husband. And I actually commented on that. And sometimes I feel like I'm being bitchy, but I thought, you know, not everyone has a husband, and not in the way that I'm a single, you know what I mean? I think that it's part of it is just changing your language and thinking a little bit before about the situation that there may be, you know, it's not always, you know, the woman following the man, or that they could be same-sex partners, and there are other things to think about. And the other thing is also doing research for those, for the relocation people. I know that we met a couple online through some roundabout way, Guru and Ed, that were looking to move to Heidelberg. Yeah, through another friend.
Expat friend.
And they were trying to research what's it like for gay people over there, in which, you know, which city should we move to? Are we going to be accepted? Is, you know, are there going to be issues? What about our kids? That kind of thing. And that's not an easy thing to find out. And it's something that HR needs to be aware of, and also, you know, the relocation companies. Because you can't, you could probably Google it and find, okay, there are gay bars for 18-year-olds and whatever, but that kind of information also needs to be findable. I mean, in language, it's my job. I'm an editor. Besides my essential oil business, I'm an editor. And that's the thing. I think language has such power. And it's about making people feel accepted and comfortable, and wanting to even, you know, show up.
And, well, welcome.
And welcome too. Yeah.
You know, from my dim distant HR background, you know, I was very into rewriting equal ops policies and diversity policies and everything. And yeah, language is so powerful. And I think, you know, when you're talking about relocation, you've got somebody that anybody's going to feel concerned, apprehensive about moving to a new country anyway. But if you layer on top of that the fact that they might have to almost go back into the closet again, you know, that makes it doubly scary.
Wow, what a great find there, Kirsty, that you found. And it makes you really think about diversity wherever you are, or diversity in the group, or diversity in your friends, etc.
Yeah.
I often find that.
Yeah. I think, Nikki, particularly in our Facebook group, it made me, speaking to these women really made me realise how important language is. And, you know, we have nearly 12,000 members in our group. And, you know, last week we got into quite a lengthy conversation about the term of trailing spouses and expat wives, and said, right, we're banning that language.
Banned. It's gone.
Totally banned. It's totally gone. And Sarah and Kim give you a really good message, I think, about why we need to stop using those labels, because we are a diverse group and you exclude people when you use those labels. And I think they explained it very, very well, you know, that it is kind of hurtful. Not everybody has a husband. You know, not everybody is a wife. You know, not everybody fits into, you know, we have a lot of single women within the group, and we have, you know, women who are with women in the group. And that's why language is very, you know, you have to be very careful with the language you use when you're talking in a group. But I also thought the beautiful thing was it showed you that their issues are exactly the same as ours, that there is nothing different about their issues and our issues of what happens in our expat world and culturally, and trying to fit into a culture and trying to find your people within that culture. We are all pretty much exactly the same.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. But they also almost have expat issues, and then they have additional issues that they face because of being a same-sex partnership in some cases, not in all cases.
Yeah.
So it's just that extra level of complexity again.
Yeah, absolutely. If you would like to come and tell us about your expat relationship, we'd love to hear from you on twofatexpats.com, and you can leave us a message and I'd love to speak more. Okay, so this week on Expat Tech, I came across an article in the New York Times called How to Clean Your Filthy, Disgusting Laptop. And Nikki, I have a filthy, disgusting laptop. Do you have a filthy, disgusting laptop?
I do. I'm just looking at it right now, and there are yes, I could do, it could do with the clean.
Okay, so I'm going to include this article because it just goes through what you need to clean your computer and how you go through it. And it's very, very good because it sort of gives you the supplies that you need, from rubbing alcohol to microfiber cloths, cotton swabs and canned air, which I don't have but I will be getting, and also one of those Mr. Clean magic erasers.
Where do you buy canned air from?
I think you buy it from a computer shop. I've seen it in computer shops. It's
okay.
I've got a feeling it's something from memory you have to keep away from your kids, because I think there's something naughty you can do with canned air, you know, with that whole aerosol thing. I've got a feeling. I'm not completely sure. Maybe someone can tell us about that, but I'm sure I've read stuff about that as well. It says don't bother with those specialty cleaners that you see at the big box electronics stores, that they're really useless, that you just need to sort of stick with the basics of the alcohol, the cloths, the cotton swabs and the canned air. So it says you start with the less glamorous internals, that the canned air will kind of blow away all the crumbs and the cat hair and all that stuff that you've got in there, and that you've got to start by sort of blowing out all the dust, that as tempted as you are to get into the, you know, the microscopic details of your keyboard, don't do that, that you start with the canned air. Anyway, I'll include all of the article for you, but I just thought it was really good advice, because I think you need to get into sort of all those little vents and USB ports and all of those sort of things, and it will make your laptop last a lot longer than what it is. I'm busting. I need to get my screen replaced on my laptop, and it's one of those things that I can't do it until I'm having a holiday from work, because I can't live without my laptop.
No.
Yeah.
What do you mean you have to have your screen replaced? Did you drop it? Is it cracked?
No, it's not cracked. It's my certain year of MacBooks, their screens are renowned for being a little bit smudgy, and Apple has very kindly offered to replace everyone's screens for free. But you've got to go in, obviously, and drop it off at an Apple place to get the new screen on it. So I've been told by a long time from Apple, yep, we'll replace it, but I just need that time to go and hand it in.
Ah, very good. Perfect. Well, good idea. Yes.
I don't use a desktop at all, do you?
No, I have a desktop. We have a desktop. It's in the playroom and it never gets turned on unless we need a photo from a really, really long time
ago. Yes, that's us. There must be thousands of us. If you're like that and I'm like that, there must be thousands of us out there that are like that.
There must be.
Hey, this article also tells you how to get rid of sort of nasty smells in your laptop, which I hadn't thought about that at all. Like, they're saying that charcoal is a natural deodorizer.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Good to know.
Yeah. So there you go. That's how to clean your laptop. So that's my little bit of tech advice for this week.
So on to expat money. So with expat money, I just had a quick update. I talked a couple of weeks ago, waxed lyrical about TransferWise and my brand new bright green card.
Yes.
And how proud I was of it. And then it turns out that although I could choose two options to be paid, my employer only uses one option. So
what?
So I went back to PayPal. So I could, so in the Magic Hubstaff app that we've talked about, it said you can enter this account or that account, either PayPal or TransferWise. And I chose TransferWise. And then I set it all up and then I wasn't being paid. So my employer said, are you being paid? And I said, no, I can't see anything. We discovered that's because my employer only uses PayPal for payment.
Oh.
So we talked about the fact that there was a 3% charge on the money that you receive when you get paid by an employer in PayPal. So my employer took on that 3% herself. Yeah. So I got all the money into my PayPal account. But there is no such thing as a PayPal debit card. So I have to move that money. If I don't want to use it for bartering, Kirsty,
yes,
like you do, I have to move that money then into my bank account, which is fine. I'm happy to do that. And there is no charge for moving money from your PayPal account into your bank account. The only charge comes in when it's coming from an employer. So that was just a little update there, because life is messy. It's not always cut and dried. So that is how that is working for me.
Wow.
Yeah, that was my tip on there. And I just...
Hey, can I go back? I've got a question about the PayPal thing.
Sure.
So your employer transfers the money into your PayPal account and that's fine, and she handles the 3%. Is there a reason why she just doesn't transfer your pay from her bank account to your bank account?
I think it's because she has employees in all different countries and she just uses PayPal as that. So she uses Hubstaff as the tool to track payments.
Right.
That Hubstaff offers to pay through either TransferWise or PayPal. There's no bank account option in right. that particular system.
Got it. Okay.
So I think that's how that works. Yeah.
Got it.
So Kirsty, some time ago you talked about when you were doing your financial get to know yourself audit, you did a review of all your subscriptions.
Yeah.
And you talked about how it's good to know what all those are. And I agree. And that's something I've gone through this week as well. And so I did a little bit of research on, you know, how to follow up on your subscriptions, how to check your subscriptions. And so because often you might subscribe to something through one of your apps on your phone, or, you know, the in-app purchases, all that kind of stuff, that might be a regular thing. So it's not something you think about like Netflix or Amazon or something like that. It's just like a little extra thing that you don't really notice, not that you don't notice, but you don't think about because it's not front of mind. So there are two ways to check your subscriptions, one through the iOS, so if you're in Apple, and one through the Google Play Store. And I've got an article about that that I can just share and pop in. And then that led me down a rabbit hole of how, as it always does, you can't spend a minute looking at something about, and I found this website called Track My Subs, which is trackmysubscriptions.com.
Oh.
And hilariously, you can track up to 10 subscriptions for free. And then if you have between 10 and 20, you pay $5 a month. The irony.
Oh, the irony. Yes.
But it's such a pretty website. So I got so sucked in, and then I thought, oh, well, I'll just sign up with less than 10 subscriptions and see what it does.
Yeah.
So I signed up to the website, and then I got an email immediately saying, I want to thank you personally for joining us. We're so excited to help you keep track of your subscriptions. I know we do get excited about some strange things. Anyway, it went on to say, I'd also love you to join our private Facebook group.
What?
It's where you can ask any questions and updates about new features. So it's helping you sort of, it's sucking you in, purchase more subscriptions. But it is actually a great little web page, and it's got lots of pretty pictures, and it's all very current. And you can do things like you can add your subscriptions in, and it suggests to you what subscriptions you might have. So it says, you know, here's the top 20 subscriptions in the world that people have: Netflix, Apple Music, Amazon, Hulu, etc.
Yeah.
And you can just click, oh yes, I have that, I have that, I have that, I have that. And then you can choose whether you're going to track it. So it will say, is this a monthly subscription? Is it auto-renewed? Do you get a reminder to renew? And then what date does it renew? And then you can just go back in and out anytime you want. And it tracks, so it shows you how much you're spending on subscriptions per month, per year.
Oh, I think this is good.
It can send you a reminder. Do you want to opt out?
Yes.
And things like that. So and then you can get a custom reminder, or you can get a regular reminder. So I think it's really good in that it helps you track things.
Yes.
I don't know if I'll ever pay $5 a month for it, but you will find that more and more you have more subscriptions than you realize,
yes,
as you discussed last time.
Yes.
I found a couple of other apps which were free but could only be used in the US. I needed a US phone number to activate them.
Right.
And those were apps that they linked to your bank account, so they could see what subscriptions were being charged debit on a regular basis and credit card on a regular basis.
Oh, Nikki, I think that's brilliant. I think, you know, yep, $5 a month does sound hefty, but at the same time, I think you would save more than that from keeping a track on your subscriptions.
I think I read somewhere you can save, the person who signs up initially saves up to $500 a year on subscription.
Yes. And how do they say that you save $500 just from,
well,
not
just from realizing what they are,
yes,
not renewing if you're not using it, because it's always reminding you that it's there.
Yeah.
Whereas when you don't always look at your bank account and look at every single thing.
Yes.
If you look at your bank balance and you see, oh, that's about right.
Yes.
You don't sort of go down a rabbit hole to look at every single book.
And an expat perspective on this too is the one thing you need to remember is which country's credit card you're using for that subscription. So my husband very rightly pointed out to me the other day, like he'll often send me a link and say, hey, he'll say, can you change this subscription from our Qatar account to our Australian account? Because if we ever leave Qatar, this will be a problem. Because, you know, when you're leaving a country, you have to have paid all your credit card debt and you can't have any existing recurring charges coming out of it. So I think that is this could be very good for expats to remember where they've got these things and which countries they signed up for and which cards they used and to swap them over. And it's also great for, because, you know, I have to read a lot of newspapers for my job and I subscribe to a lot of newspapers, but I could see that it'll also be a great tax record as well to show what you're subscribed to and how much you're paying.
Yeah, and the other thing it does is you can choose the currency. So you can, if you say, you know, so my Netflix, for example, is a US account, so that's in a US dollars, but I have other accounts in, so my German Amazon is in euros. So I can choose the different currencies, so it will show me different currencies as well, which I thought is very good from an expat perspective.
Yeah. Oh, Nikki, that's brilliant. Good one. That's a cracker.
There you go. That's my expat money tips for this week. Now, Kirsty.
Yes.
Location, location, location.
Yes.
We're up to the letter Q.
Yes. I cannot imagine where you're going to go with this.
Well, I would like to tell you, by popular demand and request of many people, both in the Facebook group and by his private message, which you did not believe me, so I had to copy and paste some things to show you. The interwebs have spoken and they would like Kirsty Rice to be the interviewee for Q is for Qatar.
Because they don't hear enough of my voice already in the podcast.
Apparently not.
Oh. Okay. So,
are you ready?
I am ready. Lay it on me. What are your fat five?
I'd like to ask you, on a scale of 1 to 10, what your current level of in love with Qatar is.
I am a solid 10. And it's... I am a solid 10, a hard 10. I'm at the top of the 10. I might even be a 10 plus. It's the weather, Nikki. The weather here at the moment is absolutely stunning, which I alluded to before. But also I feel great because, you know, I've been on this big sort of, you know, cleanse, so I'm all fit and healthy. I've got a fantastic big dinner planned this Friday night with friends that I'm really excited about. And I'm just in a good place. You know, every now and again you're in a good place. You like where you live. You like your house. Life seems pretty easy. And then there is the absolute cracker of I'm on a plane next week. So it's that, you know, you always love the country you're in when you're about to leave it for a holiday too. Do you know, it's that feeling as well. But I am really enjoying it, and I think it's got to do with that beautiful weather because I'm spending a lot more time outside and there's a lot more to sort of see and do right now.
Perfect. And what's your best local find?
Definitely heading into the souk, I would say. The thing about our souk, and it's an interesting thing to say local, but the souk is local, obviously, but a lot of stuff in it is not local, unfortunately. So it's a win in that you get to see a lot of products from Jordan and Lebanon and Turkey and Iran, etc. But it is very hard to find Qatar products. But my favourite local find that I would suggest to people would be to head into the souk. And there's a little tiny shop in the middle of the souk that has these Turkish towels. You know the Turkish towels that are all the rage at the moment, Nikki, that you see at the beach? They're that very soft cotton sort of towel.
Let me talk to you about the last time I've seen a beach.
Sorry.
So the answer is going to be no, even though it was in June, it was in the European South. So no, but well, anyway, do go on. I'll Google that.
There is a little shop that looks like absolutely nothing, and I could probably find the shop number for you because it would be hard to find, but it's right in the middle of all the women's sort of stuff, and they have these fantastic beach towels from Turkey, and I have purchased a whole heap to take home for Christmas, and my mother-in-law purchased a whole heap when she was here. There's also some beautiful wooden bowls that I've talked about before on the blog that I get from the souk as well. My other local find that I think is a bit of a tip here that a lot of people don't realize is I head to the Georgetown Library often to write and work. The Georgetown University is a fantastic university here, and if you head to Qatar Foundation and to Education City, you'll see that you can use those things. They will happily let you in. You don't need to show your ID, you don't need to do anything, and you can sit down and sit in this beautiful library and just be in a completely different environment. And my latest local find, I guess, would be the farmers markets that are also Education City. I went there last week with my husband and we bought some lettuce, like lettuce to grow. So there's some little baby ones that we've since planted in the ground, and we've got eggplants and we've got all sorts of things. Or if you're from somewhere else, you might call them an aubergine. The markets were very, very healthy. I bought some protein balls. I've just realised I've still got some in the fridge. I need to go and eat them. Or energy balls, I think they were called. So, yeah, that would be my local find at the moment.
What about what drives you crazy?
What does everybody say to the answer to this question? Everybody says
it's something to do with the traffic.
The same thing. The traffic for me, because I work from home, so I don't have to do the commute into the city every day. But, yeah, it can be frustrating if you need to get to the other side of town. But I would say the thing that has driven me the craziest here, as opposed to anywhere else I've lived, has been trying to infiltrate the local community. And it's very, when you live in Qatar, when you look at local housing, it is very much, you know, concrete boxes, and you don't see in people's windows. You know, like I liken it to, if you go to our place at the beach, you could literally stand on the street and wave to me while I'm standing at my island bench. Do you know, we wave to people as they wander by. My mum's there at the moment and she's saying how much she loves just sitting out the front and watching the pass. She calls it the passing parade. So I'm used to living in very much in a fishbowl and seeing people and sort of having the community in our front yard. Whereas in Qatar, it's very hard to meet local people because it is very much a closed community. And I guess culturally they are so much into family and they're very tribal amongst their own people that sometimes it's hard to sort of really get to know other Qataris.
Okay. What's one place you'd love to live?
This is going to sound stupid. I would really like to move to somewhere like Rwanda or somewhere that is just so vastly different to what I'm used to. I'd love to go to Myanmar or somewhere like that. I would expect that our next move would probably be somewhere in Asia. I've always said that I never got over Asia and I'd love to live in Asia. And I think with my husband's role, we're probably more likely to end up in a Singapore or somewhere like that. And I guess for my job, it doesn't matter where I am, but if I could move to a better time zone for my work, that would be good as well.
Okay, fair enough. I'll look out for you in Myanmar. I'll look for your Insta stories from Myanmar. What's the best piece of advice you've ever been given about your expat life? I can guess. Yeah. I'm going to guess.
Yeah, you guess it. I think you've got it.
Is it your mother-in-law?
Yeah. Absolutely. And she told me that before I was even an expat. Don't blame each other, blame the situation. And I think that is just the best piece of expat advice I've had, and for all relationships of don't blame each other, blame the situation, is sometimes this expat life puts us in situations that are of no fault of our own. And I guess the one thing I've written or one piece of advice I would give is that expat love never dies. It simply relocates. That's one of my favorite things that I've written of that I think, you know, I have girlfriends and, you know, I have my girlfriend Leah who's in Houston and I have Erica who's in Amsterdam, and I still adore those women as much as I did when they were right next to me and they were my expat friends within the country that I was in. And I miss them so, so much, even though I don't get to talk to them all the time. And so I still feel exactly the same way about them as I did when we were in the same country. So, yeah, expat love never dies. It simply relocates.
That's so lovely. What about the biggest lesson you've learned?
Oh, shivers, the biggest lesson I've learned. I think that nothing's ever as drastic as you as it feels at the time. Do you know when you're away from home and you're away from your people, it can feel so catastrophic when something goes wrong, but usually it's nothing. A good sleep and a little bit of time can heal and work through. Do you know, people will always come and help you out. You just have to ask.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. That is so true. Oh, so insightful. What a great interview. One thing, Kirsty, we do ask our location people is if there's something they're reading, watching or listening that they'd like to share.
Oh,
so this might be a perfect segue.
I think this is the perfect segue for reading then. So, Nikki, I am reading at the moment a lot of Christmas recipes because it is mid-November and I have got it into my head that this year, I've never done this before, but this is going to be my year. I am going to be that woman that you see with those lovely Christmas, you know, goodies in a little bag that she hands to the neighbors and to the friends where she's just whipped up some cookies or she's whipped up some, you know, lovely Christmas recipes. And so I found one and it was for cranberry crumble bars. And I just thought
they
looked very Christmassy. And I will pop the recipe into our show notes for people. But it's just cranberries and orange and sugar and almond extract, bit of cinnamon. That's kind of the juices of it. And then the crust is flour and almond flour and sugar and baking powder, salt, nutmeg, orange, butter, some egg whites and vanilla extract and sugar. And these things to me just looked very Christmassy. My mum makes an amazing white Christmas, which is very good, and I'll be asking her too.
Yeah.
And the other thing I'm on the lookout for is I glazed our ham last year. So every year we buy a ham and just, I don't know what you do, Nikki, but at our house what we do, because I'm here in Qatar and obviously I'm going to be heading to Australia. So I have ordered my Christmas turkey and I've ordered my ham and I've ordered my Chinese pork because we will on Christmas, you know, we'll get the one ham going sort of pre-Christmas that we'll slice into and share, but then we'll do on Christmas Eve, I will glaze the ham. And you know how you see that fancy glazed ham where people have knived it in the crisscross and they've put the little cloves in and all that sort of stuff. I attempted it last year, but I
didn't. Cloves, that's what they are. Yes. I always wondered what they were.
And I attempted it last year, but I didn't peel the kind of fatty skin back properly. I didn't do it properly. And it kind of was a bit of a disaster and I ended up having to sort of cut it all up before people could really look at it because it was just still a bit of a disaster. So I am determined that this year I am going to glaze the ham properly so I can have that whole, you know, piece de resistance on the table on Christmas Day that looks fabulous.
Well, we'll be looking for those Insta stories as well, Kirsty.
Yeah. And on that, Nikki, just on Christmas cooking and expat cooking, we had a post in the Facebook page where someone was saying, you know, what's your best recipe or expat recipe from the country you lived in? And I was saying that I have this expat cookbook at home and it is recipes that I have gathered from expat friends. So, you know, we've all got the friend, you know, I had this friend, Nolene in Libya, who made an amazing lemon cake, and I got the recipe from her. And I met this amazing woman in Houston who'd made this pecan baked cheesecake, and Trish, and I got the recipe from her. And I have Muna's hummus that I met in Tripoli as well. So I wanted to think, do you do that? Have you gathered recipes from expat friends, you know, food that you've liked and kept it?
Oh, you know, I haven't. And I was so jealous when I heard that you'd done that. Well, I wasn't jealous. I just was kicking myself because I was thinking about all the people. So now I'm going to have to make a list of all the people and the things I like, and I'd like to just send them an email, send them a message and say, I'll be needing that for my book.
And I think we should start a thread. We should start a thread in the Facebook group saying to share your friend's recipe, because I would love to have a thread of, you know, here's Nikki's, you know, hidden marinade sauce that she's got.
Might be Nikki's, but yes, I do. Yes. No, I make mini quiches, and that's something that's my go-to. Like if I have people for lunch, it's pretty much the first time they meet me, they'll have mini quiches, and then I'll rotate that back in at some time later in our friendship. And so I'm often giving that recipe away because a lot of people say, oh, I want to know how to make those.
Yeah.
And I got that recipe from a flatmate I had a long time ago as well. So yes, but not in my expat life, but yes. Okay. Good point.
What are you reading?
What am I reading? I'm reading. I finished Michelle Obama's book, Becoming.
Yes.
I did love it. It didn't have hardly any politics in it. And that was a bit disappointing to me because I do like the political side, but I still really enjoyed it. I thought it was a good story. Yeah. And I think it was probably the right note to strike.
Right. And what are you watching?
What are you watching, Kirsty?
I have, with the kids, got back into this season 3 of This Is Us. We're just up to about episode 4. I think This Is Us is just as good as it was in season 1. I think they have really kept the quality of that show going, that I am still
That's tough. Yeah.
And I am still completely invested in those characters, and I still howl at every episode. Like, it is just one of those, it's very clever writing, I think, and it really captures you. So, yeah, I'm back on This Is Us. The kids and I just finished the latest season of Doctor Doctor, which is an Australian series about a heart surgeon in the city who returns to his rural roots, and it's got everything that you want in a good old, you know, little country series that's easy to watch for 45 minutes with the kids. A little bit of love interest, a little bit of drama because, you know, everything happens at the hospital, a little bit of country community. It's very much a country practice of, you know, the 2010s, and have really, really enjoyed that. I think that's a good one if you want to watch with your kids. I did watch the actual football draft, Nikki. I know we talked about it last week, and then
of course you did.
And I watched it religiously. I loved it. I loved, loved, loved it. I was very happy with the draft. And I finally, finally watched the first season of Ozark with my husband, which I thought was great. And I think we've talked about Ozark before and the premise behind it, that he is a money launderer and is working for the mob and has had to relocate and start afresh and find a way to launder $8 million in the Ozarks. It's good, but it got violent towards the end, and it was just a little bit too much for me.
Were you not a Breaking Bad? You didn't watch Breaking Bad?
I didn't watch Breaking Bad, and I think I had the same issues with Breaking Bad, where I watched a lot of it through my fingers.
Yeah.
just a little bit too much. But it was all good. It was all good, and I'm glad. And I will watch season 2, but I have to do a lot of the, you know, watching it with my husband going, have they stopped yet? Has he stopped removing his toenail yet?
Yeah. Season 2, it gets a bit darker. I'm not sure whether you're going to get far into it.
Okay. All right. What are you listening to?
Okay. So this is sort of a culmination of watching, listening, reading, etc. So about a month ago or a couple of months ago, there was a lot of stuff in the media about social credit and a social credit system in China. Yeah. Did you see any of that?
Yeah. I just saw a little bit and pieces, yeah.
I will share a link from the ABC that had a great article about it. But what I loved about the article was the way it was all put together, the digital presentation of it, was one of those where you scroll and the pictures go over the top of other pictures and then there's pullouts of quotes and things. Yeah. And it was just visually very pleasing.
Yeah.
And it talked about the social credit system in China. So the social credit system in China is a system where people are, they don't have a credit, like a financial credit system. So it's more about social credit. So it's about your behaviors across the board, not just financial behaviors, and how they can impact you in your daily life. So there's something like 200 million cameras in China. So you can be watched a lot of the time when you're doing anything in a lot of places in China. So the premise is that social credit is good if you do all the right things by the government, but social credit can be bad if you do the wrong thing by the government, so to speak. So in the article that I'm referring to, there was a female marketing executive called Dan Dan, and she was portrayed as being very happy with the scheme. So she has a good job. Her husband has a good job. They have a child. Having a child adds to her social credit score because that's a positive thing. So buying nappies or diapers, she gets positive marks. But if she buys junk food, she might get a minus. If she keeps a job, she gets positive marks, etc. And then obviously, if there's a good side, there's obviously also a flip side, which is another a bad side. So the example in the written piece is about a journalist who was on the wrong side of the government. He'd uncovered corruption in the government and had pursued some serial murder cases. He was charged with a speech crime and all his social capital was gone. So his social credit was gone, and that meant he basically finds himself locked out of society. So if he wants to buy a train ticket to another city, he can't do that online. So there's no way for him necessarily to physically get to another place.
Wow.
So in 2015, he was lost a defamation case after he was accused an official of extortion, and he was made to publish an apology and pay a fine. But when the court demanded an additional fee, he refused. So then he became blacklisted as dishonest. So anyone interacting with him can look him up on the social credit system, and he's listed as dishonest. It doesn't say why he's dishonest. It just says he is. This is not a person you should do business with. So it really basically, it can be very positive and very negative. So apparently there was also a Black Mirror episode about this. Have you watched Black Mirror at all?
No.
Okay, so Black Mirror is a TV series that talks about future technological impacts or future social impacts on society. But it's not a series in that the story builds each time. Each episode is an individual standalone episode that investigates one single topic and various outcomes, etc. So I never really got into it. The first episode was about the Prime Minister having to do something very embarrassing in front of a camera because his family had been kidnapped or something. I can't remember.
So where is Black Mirror based? Like what, which country and where do you find it?
I think it's a US TV series. It's been out for a few years. I don't know if it's on Netflix or not. I'll look into it. When all these social credit articles came out, then people said, oh, this is just like an episode of Black Mirror that had actually happened. So yeah. I haven't seen that.
See, it's funny because I was thinking when you were explaining it, I was thinking I've watched a, and I keep thinking it was something on The Good Place or something like that, where they had, or whether it was one of those little, you know, things that kind of pops up in your Facebook feed, but I've watched where they had the couple that were trying to get the house, and it was exactly this kind of theory, you know, of you were gaining coins as you went along. You were getting credits on a daily basis on your phone, and it was this ding, 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 and you watched as this person lived their life and getting this ding, ding, ding sort of, you know, in a thought bubble above their head. It's kind of like one of those nightmare stories that's come true.
Yeah, so another thing, so in the listening side of thing, Planet Money did a podcast called Number 871, Blacklisted in China, and I've really got back into Planet Money recently and I really enjoy those.
Yeah,
so when you look at the article, you think, oh, he's a journalist. Like, that's a dodgy career. You know, you could see yourself getting in trouble with the government in any country, really. Obviously, in some countries, it'd be worse than others. And then in the Planet Money podcast, they actually referred to a businessman. So he'd owned a coal company and been a very successful businessman. And then China changed its whole energy policy with very little notice and didn't buy coal anymore. So he was caught with all these stores of coal that were worth nothing. So he went bankrupt and owed hundreds of thousands of dollars to different people, and he got blacklisted that way.
Wow.
So he's also a person that can't book a fast train. He has to book a slow train. So, you know, he can't do various things. He can't have various accounts, etc. And in his town, they put up like mobile notice boards, you know, the thing that flashes up and says this is a 30 zone, and they just put it up when they're doing roadworks, etc.
Yeah.
Well, they put up those kind of signs, but with people's faces on it. So he was driving around town and he saw his face. Don't do business. This is a bad person.
Good Lord. What is the government's motivation for this?
Well, it's obviously I don't know. I think that's a very detailed answer in terms of the Chinese government. But I think it's to have a measure of control of society, right? So that if you want everyone to do the right thing according to what you think that should be, then you reward them for it. And if they're not doing it, then you punish them for it. And then it pushes more people into the participating in a good way zone, I guess.
And
that's the way.
And in all of your reading and watching and listening, Nikki, was there anyone that said, oh, I can see this idea really taking off in the Western world?
No. It seemed to be a cautionary tale. All these stories come from China's sample protest programs, but they are pushing ahead apparently to have it implemented nationwide sometime in 2020, I believe. Mm-hmm. So that also made me wonder, what if you're an expat living in China?
That's what I want to know. Like, what happens if you go to watch the footy in Shanghai?
That's right. Will you have a social score? How will that work? How will it work if you have a permit to live in China for a certain period of time? What if you got caught with, say, I don't know, a VPN?
Yeah.
What would happen then? So it just made me really think that it's all very well in a way, or not very well, for that to affect the country's citizens, but it really affects the country's residents. And or what if you're a tourist? Do you get a ranking before you come into town, and then do hotels treat you accordingly? It's just it's a very interesting and just perhaps somewhat disturbing concept. It's a huge accept
because if you get, you know, like you need a visa to get to China, and it's not easy, I can tell you, because I did it here in Qatar. It involves lots of lining up and all the rest of it. And you, Nikki, yourself had an experience of getting your visa for Shanghai when you were in Hamburg.
Yes.
So I think, what happens if you go and they decide that socially you weren't acceptable on your 10-day visit, and, you know, no, maybe we won't give it to her next year because we liked this person who came better.
That's exactly right. And do they target tourists that spend a certain amount of money? So if I wanted to backpack through China, am I the wrong kind of tourist because I'm spending less money? I mean, it's very interesting where it could go. Obviously concerning for a lot of people as well. So just thought it was just a big thing a couple of months ago. So the world must have turned its focus on it momentarily, and then there was a butterfly and we looked away. But I'll be interested to see sort of what the follow-up articles are and what comes of it.
No, that's great. Okay, Nikki, I think we're done. But just before we go, I do want to ask people that if they have a moment now that they're finished with us, if they're still here with us, would you mind please just leaving us a review or a rating on iTunes? It's the only way that we can get our message out there to say here we are, and it really helps us a lot.
That would be awesome. Thank you, guys.
Okay.
See you next week, Kirstie. Oh, in Australia.
Yes, I will be in Australia next week. So I think I leave on the Sunday and arrive on the Monday. So, Nikki, our recording's usually done on a Tuesday. So I will definitely be wide awake on Tuesday night. I'll probably be wide awake till 4 o'clock in the morning. So I'll be around to record for sure.
Perfect. Okay, speak to you then.
Okay, bye.